This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Ash.
I'm Katie.
What's going on, Katie?
Bum, bum, bum. School, final things, work, overextended myself. We just had our first book club meeting, and it was so much fucking fun.
It was so much fun!
It was like 2 hours. We were just like shooting the shit and talking. It was so much fun. So special shout out to Lemma and Andy who joined us.
It was fantastic. If I sound a little weird this week, sorry. I'm a bit sick. There's a lot of people around that have been sick in the last couple weeks, and I'm really trying to like stay away from them, but it got me. It got me, and my body is revolting because I'm really, really stressed. So it was like, yep, you're gonna be sick and your period's gonna come a whole ass week early because you're stressed as fuck.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. So I'm probably gonna keep my microphone muted for a good portion. So I'm sorry if there's not as much commentary as usual from me, but I am excited for Katie's storytelling. And this is why I sound weird, because I'm sick. Yay. And I move in 6 days.
Yes. So soon. So soon. I'm ready to just get into it so that we're not spending too much of your voice on intros.
Yeah, I'm ready. Let's do it.
From lordshiptitles.com. Quote, today, earls are primarily social figures with little political power. They do, however, retain some influence within their communities. For example, an earl may be asked to serve on a local board or committee. Additionally, an earl's land holdings can offer a certain amount of power and prestige. Ultimately, an earl's power is determined by his wealth and status within his community. While an earl may not wield the same kind of power as he did in previous centuries, he can still be a powerful figure in modern times. End quote.
Thank you so much for looking that up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I'll be super honest, I felt like that was a lot of words to say nothing really of substance. So I looked into the history. Quote, by the 13th century, earls had a social rank just below the king and princes, but were not necessarily more powerful or wealthier than other noblemen. The only way to become an earl was to inherit the title or marry into one, and the king reserved a right to preserve the transfer of the title. End quote.
Okay, so if the king was like, no, I don't like who the next heir is going to be, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So, like, you don't even matter, really.
Yes.
You just have status and money. Okay.
This didn't really mean anything to me, which made me realize, like, the American peasant trash that I am, I needed some more context.
Okay.
This sent me down a little bit of a rabbit hole, so please bear with me. The five titles of the peerage in descending orders from precedence or rank are Duke, Marquis, Earl, Viscount, and Baron. The highest of the peerage, Duke, is the most exclusive. The title Duke is derived from the Latin du, a leader, and the title originally signified like sovereign status. For example, William the Conqueror was Duke of Normandy, and it was not adopted as a peerage title until 1337, when King Edward III conferred the dukedom of Cornwall upon his eldest son, shocking, the Black Prince. This sentence from Quora.com really clicked what all of this meant for me. Susan Payer, self-identified childcare professional with 38.5K answers and 10.2 million answer views, wrote, quote, now, for Prince Harry, Duke of Sussex, to become king, King Charles, Prince William, Prince George, Princess Charlotte, and Princess Louis would all have to die or pass on the thing. It's also highly likely that Prince William's children will at some point have Duke and Duchess titles someday. End quote. I knew fucking nothing about the line of succession.
It's crazy that your brother can be king, but you can't, and his kids come first, but you've been around longer.
Because once he has kids, it goes to them. once those heirs are born. It's so fucking weird.
So antiquated and stupid. Sorry to anyone who likes the royals.
It's so dumb. Sorry, I just spilled my water.
No.
Not a lot of it, but it was enough and it was cold enough that it was really shocking.
I also just realized as we're recording this for any of the clips that I make that because of the honey cough drops that I have in my mouth, my tongue is so yellow. And I'm like, it's gonna look so fucking funny.
I love that. She's, oh my God, she's fine. She's healthy.
I'm healthy. I swear I'm not jaundiced. We're not dying of scurvy.
Following the Dukes is the Marquess, which was made up, I mean introduced, to England by Richard II in 1385. He wanted to give his friend Robert de Vere, Earl of Oxford, a promotion. So he was like, word, here's this new thing between my kids, the princes, and the Dutch and the dukes. Here's this new thing that we're going to do. And that really fucking pissed the earls off, for the record. And there was a bunch of, I'm sure there's historical shit about that, but that's not what this episode or this rabbit hole is about.
Oh, you know what this reminds me of? When they just like made more levels in Scientology.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say when you're playing like imaginary pretend games with a 4-year-old and they're like, and I'm level 5 now. That's what it reminded me of.
We went in very different directions with that.
So we already talked about the earls and the history of that. And then after them, we have the fourth rank in the peerage, the Viscount and the Viscountess. This title had its origin in the office of deputy or the lieutenant, the viscomes of a count, a rank that had been hereditary in the Holy Roman Empire by the beginning of the 10th century. And it was also used for sheriff or like sheriff of a county. So at least that has like a history back to like way back when.
Yeah, and like kind of part of a job.
Yeah, it like said something about you. Last, we have the barons. Barons literally meant man, being the king's tenant in chief, i.e. a landholding nobleman. There's like a whole website, like multiple websites that will teach you all about this. They'll be in our source notes. They have like quizzes and stuff. If you really want to learn more, it's a whole fucking world. I had no idea. But what I really gathered from all of this is that this is all bullshit that started as a way to sort of appease your rich friends and signify your closeness to royalty and sort of separate and identify wealthy, important families who are potential prospects to marry into your wealthy, important family. It's completely made up, but it comes up later and it's really stupid, but wildly important for some reason. So there's a little context and background.
It's basically like, oh, you have land, you have money, you have status, come to our parties, everybody intermingle because you have these titles. And that's like it. This doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
Stupid rich people.
It's very weird. There's also a little bit of like rumors and lore trying to connect the not modern royal family. Let's be clear. But like the divine right of kings, royal family, that this royal family is allegedly a descend from, loves to claim that they are like picked by God and like descendants of like King David, who's like all in the Bible and the first king of Israel and like a descendant of Jesus. So like there's a whole bunch of lore that goes back to
I love that you're calling previous it lore.
Kings. I don't know what else to call
that's
it.
That's what it is. Because it's like a fucking story. It's lore.
Yeah, it's lore. It's fully lore.
It's giving like D&D cosplaying because we have money.
What a perfect comparison, because absolutely yes. And just like D&D and cosplaying, we are talking about like centuries of like weird little inside jokes and traditions and things like that you are entering into. Like we in modern times kind of joke about like, God forbid I marry into a family that runs 5Ks on Thanksgiving. Yeah. It's that, but times a million. Their traditions are wild and they're so fancy. I just had to explain all of this crazy shit to figure out, like, if you have a job later or not.
Or last week's episode when you were literally talking about all of the rules that they have for, like, decorum and how the children can act and how they can be presented. Like, that's fucking insane. These are all just made up. Who decided this?
There's so many more. Tina Brown described it as, like these weird rituals that if you can kind of get past, then it's like almost like a hazing of like whether or not you can navigate these weird rituals of the royals. And that is kind of what Diana is stepping into by entering into this family. So we left off with Diana and Charles having really just met for the first time in a way where both of them are kind of like on the same page as to what's happening, in the sense that they're both consenting adults. Adults in the sense that Diana is 18 and like Charles is like 31. It's roughly a 12-year age difference. We had briefly touched on Charles and Camilla being together, and we kind of need to get into that a little bit more because it's an important undercurrent in the life of Diana and her relationship with Charles. We talked about Charles going off to the Royal Navy last time. When he returns, Camilla is engaged, but the two of them remain really close to the point of him being named the godfather to their first child. They're friends, and Andrew's like, there are many accounts that Andrew was like fully aware of Charles and Camilla. He had affairs. It was sort of just like what you did. You had your in-person, this is my spouse, and we take pictures together, and then you had your affairs on the side. And that's how it's kind of always been, and that's the world that Charles was raised into. The reason that Charles didn't propose before he left to serve was because while Camilla was a fine prospect in terms of dating, she was not fit by their standards to be queen. Good housekeeping puts it best. Quote, first of all, even though her maternal grandfather was a baron, Camilla did not come from a sufficiently aristocratic background to make her a serious contender for a future queen. Secondly, deep-rooted sexism surrounding in the prerequisite of virginity of a royal bride doomed the match from the start. In a case like yours, the man should sow his wild oats and have as many affairs as he can before settling down, Lord Mountbatten wrote in a letter to Prince Charles. But I think for a wife, he should choose a suitable, attractive, and sweet character girl before she has met anyone else she might fall for. End quote. So there were questions about Camilla's virginity. She previously had serious boyfriends, and thus for her virginity could be called into question. Her and Andrew Parker Bowles had been on and off for like 7 years. They probably had sex. It's a long time. It's a long relationship. It's a long
time to not have sex with your partner.
Exactly. As I said in the last episode, both Charles and Diana were invited to a party, but all sources really point to the fact that people were playing a role in this, quote, fate.
It's giving Taylor Swift mastermind.
Yes. This can be seen in the way that he met Lady Sarah Spencer. Quote, Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, made designs in Charles' life too. She pushed her grandson towards the granddaughters of one of her close friends and lady-in-waiting, Lady Ruth Fermoy. Her tactics eventually worked. Prince Charles dated Lady Sarah Spencer in 1977. End quote. So the same thing was happening with Diana. She was randomly getting invited to events where Charles was going to be. She's young, from a good family, fertile, and more importantly, both her father and uncle, can swear to her virginity. And I have a fucking media quote about it.
Oh, God, this is weird vibes.
She is said to be besotted by him. Sweet, kind, nice, and shy are all the terms used to describe her. And her father, her uncle, Lord Fermoy, and others have even vouched for her virginity.
And others, excuse me.
How does your uncle know? First of all, weird that your father knows, but also like your uncle? That's, that can, bleh, the ick.
And others, so like so many people. Who are these others? That is a clip from the news. It played on the news.
Imagine being, how old was she at this point? 18?
19.
Imagine
Diana, 19, and you're just sitting there and the news comes on and they're talking about your fucking virginity. Like, that's so embarrassing for her. Like, I would be like, what the fuck? Why? Why is this the topic?
I know. I'm getting ahead of myself. They've met. She showed him a little bit of consideration for his feelings, and he is into her. He asks her on their first date, and it's chaperoned by her grandma. And every single timeline in articles that I read jumps from them meeting to them getting engaged, because truly this relationship happened in fast forward motion. Their second date was staying with him and the full staff and friends for a week on the Royal Naval Yacht. That's a vacation with a fucking stranger.
Yeah. When you're 19 years old. And it's crazy too, because that's a whole week. That's your second date. You're in the water. You can't leave. You can't leave if you want to, if it gets weird. I'm sure it did get weird.
Oh, of course it got weird. There's no way that someone who grew up knowing they were going to be king one day knows how to have a normal social interaction.
Oh my God.
Their third date was a weekend trip to their sort of like holiday home, a home where Charles went a lot to like go hunting. And it's where the royals are said to kind of be at their most relaxed, which means that they only have to change outfits four times.
In a day.
In a day.
Only four times. Okay.
Only four. All of these events are happening over a pretty long period of time. This isn't any form of dating that we've experienced or that we will ever experience. Diana is being courted as if we don't have like cars and telephones and the ability to like walk down the street and see each other, because it's not like Charles can just like call her up and be like, hey, do you want to hang out? Like, it's a whole kerfuffle. He's got schedules and meetings and press tours that he has to do and, like, security and shit, you know? So it takes a lot to align their time together.
Imagine not just being able to be like, hey, you want to go grab a cup of coffee or something? Like, damn.
No, that's not something that they ever did.
Wow. Imagine... And not even just in the sense of dating, but like imagine in your life never experiencing being able to just go to a cafe and grab a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
What?
Just not possible.
I'm never going to take that for granted again.
At this age, Diana is living the best years of her life. She's in Kensington. She's working as a kindergarten teacher and she's living with her gal pals in the city. And almost immediately, she goes from that just amazing 19-year-old life to someone who's being hounded by the press. Before I can talk about that and go further in the story, I need to talk about the relationship of the royals with the press. Quote from Business Insider, Prince Harry lifted the veil on the family's invisible contract with the tabloids during his and Meghan Markle's interview with Oprah Winfrey. He implied that the royals wouldn't defend Markle from the press's unfair treatment because they were scared of the tabloids turning on them. There's what's termed or referred to as the invisible contract behind closed doors between the institution and the tabloids, the UK tabloids. To simplify it, it's a case of if you as a family member are willing to wine, dine, and give full access to these reporters, then you will get better press, Harry said. The same article goes on quoting former Royal Protection Officer Simon Morgan, in regards to the royal family, they'll give a little bit and the media will give a little bit. Therefore, they can come to a satisfactory outcome, certainly in regards to access. End quote.
Very, very, very manipulative.
Yeah, it is. Oh, what's the word? It's a symbiotic relationship between two parasites.
You know, we just recently watched it play out just like that with the way that the narrative about where the fuck Kate is played out. It was crazy.
There are so many events that the royals go to simply to make it so that the press will like be chill with them. Like they'll support things for different tabloids so that those tabloids will be nice to them. They'll give access. Yeah. They'll print good things. They have had this invisible contract, they call it, for a really long time. Diana doesn't have that. She doesn't have that relationship with the press. So she is stepping into this world with no experience and no sort of I'll scratch your back if you scratch my relationship.
There's no one really to protect her and the narrative surrounding her. And she's so young.
So one of the big reasons that Diana is getting so much attention is because of Charles's age. I loved the description that Brown gave referring to Charles having waited too long to settle down, which put him in the toxic side of being a bachelor, which isn't wrong. He's 32 years old. I mean, that's, if you're meeting a 32-year-old man who, by all accounts, is educated and, you know, not a serial killer, who hasn't had any serious relationships, that's a red flag.
And just, like, the 12-year age difference makes me so fucking uncomfortable.
Yes.
It makes me think of my 12-year age difference with my older brother. Like, wildly different places in our lives when I was 19 and he was 32. Wildly different. And we're not royals.
It is overwhelming to think of that. The other part of this is that Diana is captivating, hilarious, smart, and adorable, and quite clearly a perfect candidate for marriage. And that's something that everyone can see. Everyone watching. The press can see it. The royal family can see it. All of the UK's population are watching this and are like, that's someone that he can settle down with. Almost constantly, Diana is being followed by a group of reporters. All of her friends and family are being harassed. She wasn't anyone officially attached to the royals, so they wouldn't provide security or help.
That is so fucked up. Wouldn't you want the person that you're trying to convince to marry your fucking son so that he has a lineage after him? Like, wouldn't you want her to be comfortable and safe?
You would think, but no, Diana was left to her own 19-year-old devices to handle the scrutiny and attention of the press. And this is something we just saw play out again with Harry and Meghan when they were stepping back. The royals withdrew their royal security team. And it's like, I'm sorry, they're still targets. Like, they're still celebrities. Like, they still need security. And what's haunting to look back on now, Andrew Morton's book holds an interview where Diana discusses that she got very good at getting, like, running yellow lights just as they were about to turn red in order to ditch cars of paparazzi following her from place to place.
Is that fucking insane with how she died?
It's really sad. She's, like, trying to talk to Charles about it. He, like, calls her up one night worried about his bestie, Camilla, because she was scared of all of the reporters outside her house.
I could not roll my eyes harder.
Do you want to guess how many reporters?
5. Not that many.
So close. So close. 4. 4 reporters outside her apartment.
And how many for Diana?
Diana thought to herself about the 32.
Are you fucking kidding me?
That were just outside there alone. I mean, you can find videos of her just, like, walking to her car. And that you just see her surrounded by paparazzi.
R.I.P. Diana. You would have related so hard with Taylor Swift.
She really would. I tweeted that out recently. I was like, R.I.P. Diana, you would have loved Taylor Swift. Because, like, you really would have. I have another great photo of Diana. Diana, like, really tried to make the most of this harassment. I just sent you a photo of a moment where her car had stalled.
Oh,
and so she couldn't get around.
Look at her face.
And she's just like modeling, like, super shocked face for the paparazzi surrounding her. And there is a moment where she is, you know, she's still a kindergarten teacher. She's not living at the palace yet. And she is working with the kids, and the kids are terrified of these strangers who are like yelling questions, and literally, like, it's so scary. Even if you know what's happening, it's terrifying. So she's like, okay, if I offer to give you a photo, will you guys leave us alone? And they say, okay. So she takes a photo, and unfortunately, she is standing in front of the sun that's shining directly through her skirt, providing an outline of her gorgeous legs. But it was like a little bit of a scandal. You know, the press were so thrilled. Charles was not happy. I think he made some sort of one-off comment of like, I know your legs are great, but like, did you have to show them to everyone?
What? Or
something.
The sun is coming from behind her. How does she know that that's how it's going to show up in a photo? That is not her fault.
No, he's an asshole. He's the worst.
What a fucking dick.
Charles is able to hide behind his castle gates. Diana is left in the streets. They want to know about her. And as time is passing, everyone wants to know if Charles is going to propose. After just a few months of dating, Prince Charles surprised a young Diana by proposing in Windsor Castle on February 3rd, 1981. Charles said, "Will you marry me?" And I laughed, Diana recalled to Andrew Martin for his biography, Diana, Her True Story, in her own words. I remember thinking, this is a joke. And I said, yeah, okay, and laughed. He was deadly serious. But while Diana was elated by the engagement, Prince Charles didn't show the same level of enthusiasm. She continued, I said, I love you so much. I love you so much. And he said, whatever love means. Just want to let that sink in for a second.
Oh my God.
I want to paint the picture. They're just hanging out and offhandedly, like, they're talking about, do you want waffles for breakfast? He goes, will you marry me? And it's so, like, it's not a proposal. He's not down on one knee. He's not pulling out a ring. It's nothing. So she's like, yeah, okay. Because this is not how you imagine a prince proposing.
No! There needs to be some, like, pomp and circumstance if we're going to do this. You're a goddamn royal, bitch.
Nothing. I'm picturing him sitting in his study, not even looking up from a newspaper. That's not how it was painted for me, but that's, like, the attitude that is presented about this. She's laughing, and he's like, you realize you're going to be queen one day. And that's when she realized that he was serious. And I'm imagining her thinking, like, oh, this is him asking if it's okay to, like, ask me in a more public way. And she's excited. She's excited to marry him. She's, I love you. I love you so much. And she is hit back with whatever love means. Like, poof. Later in February, the engagement is officially announced. And as the two are walking around sort of the courtyards and like a press walk, the press is, you know, like yelling questions at them through the fence, trying to get a sound bite of them, you know, and one of them is like, are you so in love? Are you so in love? And Diana's like, of course, like all posh and cheeky. And again, on camera to the press, this motherfucker goes, whatever love means.
What? Not to the fucking press.
And in case that wasn't enough, there is a third interview of him sitting down with Diana, of them being asked, like, in depth. And he says, like, and you two, you know, you must be so happy in love. And Diana's like, yes, yes, I love him so much. And he's like, oh, whatever love means.
Like, why is that the one line that you choose, bro? That is so weird.
Heather of Sinisterhood podcast, then this has stood out to me since they covered it a while ago. And theirs was really my first introduction to the story, was that because we know now that Charles and Camilla have confirmed at this point that they were having an affair at that point. Heather theorized that he knew Camilla would be watching the press and that he didn't want to hurt Camilla's feelings. So once the engagement is official, Diana quits her job. And first she moves into the Queen Mother's residence, the Clarence house temporarily, and then subsequently resides in Buckingham Palace until the wedding, where, according to biographer Ingrid Stewart, her life was, quote, incredibly lonely. The day after the engagement is announced, Charles grabs Diana's waist and goes, oh, a bit chubby, aren't we? And her bulimia starts.
What the fuck?
Diana goes through what is described as medically severe bulimia for the next few years of her life. Well, quite a while. I believe it actually, she doesn't get help for it until after Harry is born. So she goes through two pregnancies with severe bulimia. After everything is announced and official, that happens. The first night engaged is really a foreshadowing for what's to come. Diana arrives to an event looking incredible in a black strapless dress for what is her first official appearance as a royal fiance. I'm assuming you are familiar with this black dress. It's not her revenge dress.
I feel like I remember it, but I'm just going to Google.
I have a picture of it.
You have a picture? You want to send it to me real quick?
Yes. This dress faces a lot of scrutiny from the press and Charles himself.
Because it's strapless?
It's strapless and it's black. And black is only worn by people in mourning.
Ah. Did they tell her that?
No.
Would she have known already because she was in that kind of society?
No, because that applies to the royal family.
Okay, so just the royal family, not like high society in England.
No, if you look, you will notice the royal family is not, like, Kate is not wearing black gowns and things like that, except to, like, things in mourning. She's like, but I'm not part of your family. And he was like, well, we're engaged and you have to follow these rules. And it's a perfect example of her going into this event, doing what she thinks is the right thing to do, only for some weird secret thing that no one thought to mention to her, get her in trouble with the press and with Charles. The entire night was later described by Diana as, quote, a horrendous occasion, as she wasn't well versed in basically any, like, upper royal protocol.
Yeah.
One of the event's attendees, Princess Grace of Monaco, reportedly pulled the future princess aside and said, don't worry, it will get worse.
Fuck, girl.
Diana uprooted her entire life. She quit her job. She left her friends. And Charles just kept doing his fucking thing, which I said before included continuing his affair with Camilla. Morton's book discusses an infamous lunch meeting between the two where Diana first started seeing the red flags. She had received a, quote, friendly note inviting her to lunch. It was during that meeting, arranged to coincide with Prince Charles' trip to Australia and New Zealand, that Diana became suspicious. Camilla kept asking if Diana was going to hunt when she moved to Highgrove. Nonplussed by such an odd question, Diana replied in the negative. The relief on Camilla's face was clear. Diana later realized that Camilla saw Charles' love of hunting as a conduit to maintaining her own relationship with him, end quote. So anytime that he would go off to their hunting house, Camilla and Charles would meet. And Diana had this moment where Camilla is like asking Diana to her fucking face, oh, are you going to be hunting with your husband this weekend? And Diana's just like, no, I don't fucking like hunting. And Camilla's like, perfect. I'm going to go sleep with your husband.
Wow. That's bold as fuck.
Right? And Charles is openly gifting Camilla things that includes, like, the initials for their nicknames for each other, which some sources say are, like, Fred and Gladys, or according to Charles' biography, Girl Friday. So he's, like, gifting her necklaces with, like, initials and inside jokes and stuff. And she would gift him personalized, like, cufflinks or other gifts that she would have made to look like the Chanel logo of two C's intertwined. But it wasn't Chanel. it stood for Camilla and Charles.
Wow.
There was a point on their honeymoon where Diana, like, looks down and Charles is wearing the intertwined C's cufflinks. And she's like, was that a gift from Camilla? And he was like, yeah, what's the big deal?
What's the big deal? What the fuck? You're throwing your affair literally in her face.
It took less than a month of being engaged for the affair to become very clear and just, like, outright known to Diana. It's March 29th, 1981, where pictures emerge of Diana dressed in a red coat, crying as she watches Charles board an airplane as he leaves for a 5-week royal tour to Australia. At the time, it was believed and reported to be a touching farewell, with tears brought on by the idea of spending time apart from the Prince of Wales. Only that wasn't the case at all. According to an older Diana, who revealed in her archived recordings shared by National Geographic, her tears actually had to do with Charles's continuing affair with Camilla Parker Bowles.
I was going to ask you if that bitch went on the trip.
That was the trip that was being asked about.
Okay, okay.
So they were in the study talking, him and Diana, and they're like talking about this trip that's to come. And Camilla calls and Charles answers it and basically just like turns his back to Diana and is just like talking with Camilla and just like, oh, Louis, love you. Like talking. And Diana just like sticks around to listen and she overhears enough to confirm they are in fact having an affair.
Yeah.
And I'm not exactly sure what she overheard, but journalist Megan Friedman writes, quote, Diana said she once overheard Charles talking to Camilla on the phone. Charles was apparently on the telephone in his bath while she was on the other side of the door. She claimed she heard him say, whatever happens, I'll always love you. Diana confronted Charles later and the two had a filthy row. Diana claimed the stress of all of this helped contribute to her bulimia and that after the Camilla thing, I was, quote, desperate, desperate, desperate. When Diana was first fitted for her wedding dress, she had a 29-inch waist. On her wedding day, her waist was 23.5 inches. Diana got engaged in February and married in July.
Oh my God.
There was a point in the moments before their, quote, fairy tale wedding, where Diana recalled that she was considering calling it off. She's speaking to her sisters, reaching out to them in sheer panic, crying, I can't marry him. I can't do this. This is absolutely unbelievable. And their response was basically tough luck. Quote, your face is on the tea towel. You are too late to chicken out now. End quote. They told her. This is not to say that Charles was thrilled either. It said that he wanted to call the wedding off as well, but was worried that if he called it off, what would that look like? What's that going to do to Diana and her future of anything else? Like, he's going to be fine. He's the king. Is that a revisionist look back on it? I don't know.
Why the fuck do you give a shit about her now? You clearly don't care about her at all.
No, but he did not want to marry her.
Yeah.
And like, that is clear. So it's like, was he actually concerned? Like, did he, like, actually care and, like, want to marry Camilla? And, you know, like, what did he want to, like, run away with Camilla? Or, you know, I don't really know.
Because another part of it could be, like, if he did break it off, look at what age he is. How much of a disappointment would he be to the queen and to other people for, like, once again letting them down in a relationship? So there's also that, too. But he could not want to be so honest about that being a reason and make up something about caring about her to make himself look better.
Exactly. Diana convinced herself that things would get better after the wedding, and the night before, she spent her night binging and purging. Diana became Princess of Wales at age 20 when she married Charles, 32, on the 29th of July in 1981. The wedding was held at St. Paul's Cathedral, which offered more seating than Westminster Abbey's, which is usually the church that is used for royal weddings. The service was widely described as a fairy tale wedding and was watched by a global audience of 750 million people, while 600,000 spectators lined the streets just to catch a glimpse of the couple en route to the ceremony. The dress designers did not account for the carriage that Diana had to drive in when making her dress. So she was like literally stuffed in there with her father because of how big her dress was.
I just saw a TikTok video too about the fact that the material that was used, like, it got like super fucking wrinkled.
Mm-hmm. As Diana walks down the aisle, you can see Camilla Parker Bowles in the audience on camera. Means Diana had to see her as she walked down the aisle. At the altar, Diana accidentally reversed the order of Charles's first two names, saying Philip Charles Arthur George instead of Charles Philip. It was arranged by the couple that she wouldn't say the word obey. So she, like, that is the traditional vow to, like, honor and obey, but they dropped obey. At the time, that was quite a hubbub.
I mean, I'm kind of shocked that they did that.
I mean, I think that Charles is a religious person, and he was like, I'm not fucking obeying you either. You know, like, I think they dropped obey in general. I think he didn't want to swear before God. I don't know, but she was like, I'm not doing that. The two traveled to the yacht for their honeymoon, and Diana recalls, quote, I just had such a hope in me that was slashed by day two. Day two of her marriage. And she's like, we're not doing good. So I have three situations.
Okay.
We'll try and guess which one it was. On their beautiful honeymoon, Charles brought 8 books. The happy newlyweds got to spend their time doing press tours and got, quote, maybe a few minutes together daily. Was it when they're sitting down and they're preparing for dinner, a white tie dinner with the Egyptian president, when the new Princess of Wales spied a pair of cufflinks on Charles' wrists? Quote, two C's entwined like the Chanel C's, got it in one, knew exactly. She recalled in the secret tapes that she sent to Morton, Charles, and Camilla. Or was it when they sat down together with their planners to figure out how they could spend time together in the up-and-coming craziness of being prince and princess, and two photos of Camilla fall out of his planner? Which one slashed the hope for Diana? I hope to hear your answers before next week. Until then, bye.
Oh, wait, really?
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.